flesh.
Like, oh, I see.
As opposed to cyber. You have got cyberspace.
Oh, I see. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So you'd have to go out into meat space and actually like buy a beer or a coffee or a head of lettuce if you're meeting people at the grocery store. And you'd actually have to go out.
I mean, you're absolutely right. But I do think the big thing that changed, and we interviewed somebody who was a bit of a user interface expert on this back in the day.
That's going back a while, yeah.
But really, it was that, you know, when it was a website, Match.com, Plenty of Fish, those kinds of things, you had to kind of get to know the person a little bit before, but now, but then for a while, it was top, bottom, age, question mark, that was it, or pics, question mark, that was it. And then we got deluged by unsolicited penile photography.
Actually, if you remember that,
it's never got better.
The UI UX expert who actually looked at all the different apps, if you remember, she actually said that the one that jumped out at her as being the best was Scruff, because for all the others, it was completely and totally not obvious how you found out information about them. Whereas with Scruff, she said, you can actually learn about who they are as a human being. And she said, if she were to guess, she would say more people are more likely to actually date people they met off of Scruff relative to the others, which was such a weird observation that she said just when you're using software, and this is something that doesn't really come up very often, because when you're talking about Grindr, usually people talk about the impact on, well, things like the number of gay bashings went down when people started going on Grindr, because you don't just go to the local gay bar and wait outside for someone to come out so you can beat them up. But the number of home invasions went up because then people used Grindr for honeypot attacks. So
exactly,
the number of attacks went down, but the severity of attacks went up. But you don't hear a lot of people talking about things like user interface, user experience. So when you're looking at any app whatsoever, we're not even just talking about dating apps, all apps, there's something about the interface, and you can take a four-year degree to learn what that something is. There's something about that interface that tells you how to use it, how to interact with it, what experiences you should be able to expect from it. And it's not just like color theory, like if it's pleasant teal colors, you know, you're expecting this, and if it's aggressive red colors, you're expecting that. It's not just that. It's where is information on the screen? How easy is it to access? That kind of thing. And because a lot of these quote-unquote dating apps bury information about like likes and dislikes, and it really is just picture front forward.
It's torso. Yes.
Sometimes there might be a face picture, but you have to like open the profile and then scroll down and then find the thing and then click on the thing. And then you can see what their face looks like and what their likes and dislikes are. And because of this pressing of the image forward, a lot of people complain that it had an impact by making the community more superficial.
I mean, I think you've started to edge towards the point I was hoping to make here, and that is before Grindr, and I talked about that sort of cultural shift that happened in the queer community before and after Grindr. Before Grindr, there was community. You know, people would go to gay bars, people would go to various events, and that still happens now. But it was pretty much the primary way of building connection to other people who had the same sexual orientation as you. Mm-hmm. And you had to be in the spaces where those people were to have those interactions. But then Grindr it commodified us. It turned gay men into disposable products. It turned your local area of people, neighbors, into items like an Amazon wish list. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And it effectively dehumanized a lot of queer folks. And to go on that, it also, the language that we use to communicate with each other, you know, pick top, bottom, what is your function? What are you able to do? Mm-hmm. You know, what is the cost of interacting with you? I mean, it really commodified gay men.
Some of that is from the bar scene, to be fair. Some of that pre-existed.
But it decimated queer culture.
Yeah.
It decimated queer conversation. Businesses closed.
One of the things that it did is it kind of split things so that people have at the exact same time incredibly high standards, unrealistically high standards. It also damagingly low standards. So it used to be you meet somebody in a bar, you see them across the room, they're very attractive, you talk to them, they open their mouth and you go, oh no, this person is obnoxious, they're selfish, they come off as narcissistic. You'd be like, okay, you know.
Oh, you see the person across the bar and, you know, Phil the bartender goes, maybe not. You know,
there was that community caretaking
that happened as well.
Yeah, whereas now what happens is you see that, or at least the Grindr experiences, you see that gorgeous person, they agree for you to come over to their house, you get there, they open their mouth, you're like, oh, no. And then you just kind of go, I'm already here. And it took me an hour to get here. And they're not going to do much talking. So whatever, we'll settle. And that is, you hear all these stories of people who have interactions with other people that are just not for them because of that, because there's that sort of sunk cost fallacy of, oh, I already came all this way, as opposed to we talked for 5, 10, 20 minutes at the bar. I mean, in my experience, on the one occasion in my life where I actually did meet someone at a bar, we spoke for 5 hours in total before we even exchanged phone numbers. So, I mean, I was considered incredibly frigid for waiting longer than 5 minutes by my peers at the time. But I don't know. Some people have low standards.
I want to move the conversation along a little bit. And that is, it's been 15 years. It's been a while. It changed queer culture. And I think, you know, all these years later, we talked about the security risk of it, the fact that it monitors your geographical location, people were using it to facilitate crime, nefarious governments were using it to find out who is gay in their community. Like, it's gone through the ringer, the Grindr. But I think we're starting to see this youngest generation sort of moving back. And this moves to the other story I wanted to mention today. Mm. And that is, there was a study between, I want to say, the Kinsey Institute and who else was it? There was
the Williams Institute
and Love Honey. No, it was the Kinsey Institute, and Love Honey was behind it. They did a survey of Gen Z youth in particular, and I think the University of California also has recently done a survey. The broad strokes from these studies is that Gen Z are having less intimate liaisons than previous generations.
Yes.
And lots of reasons why. You know, I think that the appetite, you know, we're talking about Grindr coming into existence prior to the Me Too movement, you know, prior to conversations about consent being, there was always conversations about consent. Let's not ignore that. Mm-hmm. But I think in the post Me Too moment, those conversations are finally taken appropriately seriously.
Yes.
Whereas they may not have before. So unsolicited penile photography, the idea of consent being something that needs to be taken with the gravity that it deserves now compared to maybe before. And also they are social media natives. You know what I mean? Gen Z, this was already in place before they got to the table. So they're just having less. If you were to start all over now, do you think that you would be more or less frisky than you may have been?
Well, I mean, here's the thing. Young people desiring sex is not a social phenomenon. That's a biological reality of human motivation. If there is a reduction in the number of people who are desiring sexual contact, that is a social phenomenon. That is, people are pulling back for various reasons. And people are still exploring what that is. I do not care to speculate at this point in time because everything that I've seen so far looks kind of matey uppy. And that is kind of, I don't know. There is a huge question mark. There is a lot of people talking about sunk investment, that the way that you meet people now is such a barrier that they're just not interested. But I do like the fact that the story here of Grindr being specifically 15 years old is very interesting, because 15 years old is the average length of a generation. So the fact that one generation went just, I'm going to say, waist deep in it.
It was bananas.
And the following generation looked at it and went, no, I think that, I mean, that is sort of the generational cycle in general. You're going to see things where one generation is all about, I don't know, disco roller derbies, and the following generation is not all about disco roller derbies, which is a pity because that's really fun. Actually, they're making a comeback, but that's unrelated. And I think the fact that the younger generation is looking at, you see a lot more skepticism about social media, about internet addiction. You're seeing a lot more people talking about the relationship between internet use and mental health. They're, because they're social media natives, they're a lot more skeptical about the potential side effects. And the fact that internet dating and internet hookup culture benefits a very small number of people greatly and everyone else not at all, I think that has also entered the discourse. And you're seeing a lot more young people saying, if you're not hyper successful within the first 2 weeks, you should just give up and move on to greener pastures. Not give up on dating, give up on internet dating. And it's sort of a harsh thing to say, but like, I don't know, like the some of the happiest relationships that I've seen, happiest long-term relationships that I've seen, are people who had either negative, neutral, or just non-first impressions of each other, where they first met each other and they're like, I don't know, whatever, some guy, somebody's friend, whatever. And then like over time they got to know them, and you're not going to get that in a internet dating environment. And a lot of people are starting to fall back on sort of like their great grandparents' advice on how to meet people. You know, it's okay if they're not a perfect 10, they probably are, just they don't come off that way at first, and you have to get to know them. And you're getting a lot more people in the younger generations who are skeptical about the internet and social media and meeting people online. And, you know, they're a lot more aware of the fact that a lot of these influencers are just lying. They're not as happy as they appear. They're not as rich as they appear. They're not as beautiful as they appear. Partly because they are social media natives. They know how easy it is to throw on a filter and lie about themselves. So they become aware that everyone else is probably doing it or possibly doing it. And that's not true in person. So I don't know. I think some of it was just inevitable that as the finer tools of how to manipulate your online presence became more well known, people would just become skeptical. You know, the magic of Hollywood has faded now that they know how the sausage is made. I am supremely mixing my metaphors here, but I don't mind if you don't mind.
I think it's worth noting as well that, you know, over the last 15 years of Grindr in the gay community, it became synonymous with hookup culture.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And for those who are, you know, sort of late teens, early 20s now, they may well have had run-ins with the app.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it probably just soured take on it.
One notable exception that we've seen time and time again over the past 15 years, which is everything that we've said, there's one major exception, and that is small towns. When you go to small towns, rural communities, where the closest house is a 2-minute drive, let alone downtown or where you go to buy more milk or a pack of smokes, a lot of these communities, they just use Grindr different. It's actually considered pretty gauche to hook up with somebody off of a lot of these apps, because there's 30 people within a 2-hour drive of your home. So you got to treat them all with respect. You cannot run through them because you will end up alone. You have to treat them with respect. So it's a very different scene. You get a lot more friendships and a lot more community being built on these apps in the countryside, in a way that you're not seeing in the city. So, I mean, I do want to sort of throw a nod at the fact that the urban and rural experience of most things are different. And that's certainly true here as well. I've seen so many articles of people saying their local community is just on Grindr, and it is not hookup scene. It is actually, it is used as a tool for meeting people. So it's so weird. I mean, everything's a double-edged sword. You know, a hammer is, you know, a great way of building a house and also of hurting people, depending on how you use it. Same thing with Grindr. You can build things and you can destroy things with it.
Well, it's certainly its impact on the gay community has been really quite something.
Oh, yeah.
And you know what I mean? Like, it is really, it's really quite, it changed the game for sure. Is it for the better? I'm not convinced. Gen Z having less intercourse study was an American study. And of course, we can't ignore the fact that access to birth control has been severely curtailed. Abortion access has been curtailed in many, many states. Mm-hmm. The cost of living is through the roof. The environment, everything's on fire. I can imagine why. There are many reasons why maybe it's less chill to have fun now.
Yeah, but if you're talking about dudes hooking up, that doesn't really affect them.
I don't know. We also had the COVID pandemic. We had the mpox outbreak. You know what I mean? Like, the world has gone through the ringer the last few years. So the fact that some of the youngest gays among us are a little, gun shy, it makes a lot of sense to me. That's for sure. We'll keep an eye on that as it develops. I do want to note, we haven't really dedicated a lot of time to Nex Benedict's death in Oklahoma. Nex Benedict, the indigenous trans student at Owasso High School in Oklahoma, who died in February following a horrific bullying attack, in which case I believe he went to the hospital and was treated. The detailed autopsy has been reported. At the time, many in the queer community thought that Nex had effectively been murdered, having died almost immediately after a horrific bullying incident at the school. Apparently, this was a pattern of bullying. It had been happening for a long time. It was violent. However, the detailed autopsy does reveal that there was no brain injuries, that all of the bruising and cuts and lacerations and so on were not of a serious enough nature that could cause physical death. However, it was a very high concentration of medications. I'm not going to go into the details as to what they are, that Nex himself had access to, that the coroner has indicated, the chief medical examiner has indicated as being the cause of death, combined toxicity from those various medications. But it has raised the question of anti-trans bullying in schools. The U.S. Education Department, the Federal Education Department, is launching a civil rights investigation into how those school boards, that school district, manages these incidents of bullying. The Human Rights Campaign and GLAAD have also weighed in, and it's really caused a bit of a reckoning around bullying in Oklahoma and elsewhere. But it has been strongly indicated by the chief medical examiner's office that this was not a murder, but or rather manslaughter. So we were aware of the case, we had been monitoring it, and we'll continue to keep an eye out on similar stories. I think we are about out of time. We are playing out with our last song, which is With Me by Julia Dales. I have been Luke Smith.
And I've been Sebastian. And thank you for listening.
Blinded by your side, sinking without you. Take me to a different world. Fireflies and fireworks. There's a fear around the sun. Hey. Take me to a different world.
talk to heart. Did you find it best?
PFLAG Canada is there when it seems no one else is. Did you know that LGBT students hear anti-gay slurs an average of 26 times a day? One out of every four LGBT youth are told to leave home. LGBT youth are more likely to be homeless. 30% of suicides are LGBT. PFLAG is committed to anyone struggling with sexual orientation and gender identity issues. PFLAG Canada supports, educates, and provides resources 24/7. Visit pflagcanada.ca.